Blog
Good evening,
Talk
ladies
Radio.
And gentlemen. This is, thing catch me every time. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, David Murphy, from the National Black Unity News newspaper. First and foremost, I want to welcome all the guests that's on in-house with us on the Zoom call. And we just put out the information on Facebook Live, and we have my brother, Satawi Jahi, who's doing Blog Talk Radio, and I'll soon will be posted in the other rooms as well. So we want to welcome everybody to the call this evening. And there's several issues we want to talk about today, but, you know, we always have open discussions as well. And I have a guest supposed to be coming in. Hopefully he'll make it. And if not, we'll take it from here because he's well-versed in the subject matter that I want to speak about. But nevertheless, I want to share a little information with you about who, what, and where, and the purpose of the National Black Unity News newspaper. First and foremost, it's from my perspective, it's by divine inspiration. When I say that, I literally mean that I was inspired to do this. And it just so happened that it took in the form of a business as well. And so you have to render to Caesar what is Caesar, for those of you who understand what I'm saying. But at the same time, it's a publication to support, inspire, and give information to our readers. And also, it's a solution-oriented publication. And as of today, we've been around about 4 years, maybe going on five, and we put out quite a few consecutive publications. And this publication is kind of unique because we got quite a few new people coming in. Not only the new people, but the other thing is we have some of the people, our former members, that's coming back to us as well. And so, you know, blessings coming from both ends. But as we move forward, we want to let you know that this publication is unique in every sense of the word. And I encourage you, if you have not as of yet subscribed to the National Black Unity News, I encourage you to do so. It's a wealth of information by a wealth of great people. And the second thing is, too, for those of you who have an idea, a service that you know can help our people. When I say our people, I'm talking about Black, African American, melanated people. Now, when I keep saying that, Black, melanated, and all of that, don't mean I'm against anybody else. All it's saying is that we try to equal the playing field by uplifting our own. And we all know that the disparities in this country has not always been equal and still is not to this day. But in any case, I'm going to bring my brother on before I go any further. Brother Satawi, are you ready, sir?
Yes, sir, I am.
Well, first of all, I want to introduce my brother, Satawi Jahi, who always brings us powerful information, affirmations, and he always shares a little information with you. So, again, brother Satawi, I appreciate you, sir, and you got it.
All right. Thank you, David. As we do every time we come on here, we do a reading from Daily Motivations, African-American Success. The author is Mr. Dennis Kimbrough, who's also the author of Thinking, Grow Rich, A Black Choice.
Excuse me.
And he also was driven by divine inspiration. He wanted to continue. Napoleon Hill was working on a manuscript years ago for Black America, and he wanted to continue that manuscript, and that's how he came up with the book, Think and Grow Rich, A Black Choice, because it is a choice for us to pursue wealth and break the cycle of poverty in our families. The reading for the day goes like this. Sesame Street. All of us are born in a state of ignorance, and many of us never change residence. And that's quotes from Ife Berry, Effie Berry, wife of Marion Berry, former mayor of Washington, D.C., and also who's an elder now and has passed on, and you know, we hope he rests in power and peace. It's remarkable how much we have to know before we realize how little you know. We are where we are because of what we know. If we hope to experience more of what life has to offer, we'll be forced to take in additional information. Life is for learning. In the first 5 years, along with learning to walk, talk, eat, and interact with playmates and family, from 5 to 10, we learn to read, write, and do arithmetic. We also learn more about friends, relatives, supporters, and detractors, and so our learning continues. Most people continue to learn until the age of 15 or 20. Then the growth slows, or in some cases stops. Most people then declare that their formal education is over. They feel they have nothing else to learn, which means they have a lot to learn. An African proverb offers excellent advice. Quote, "He who knows not and knows not that he knows not is a fool. Shun him. He who knows not and knows that he knows not is a child. Teach him. He who knows not and knows not that he knows is asleep. Wake him. He who knows not and knows that he knows is wise. Follow him. I now know that it makes a big difference in life whether I live and learn or just live. And so, you know, we're constantly learning to the day we die if you're growing. And so, you know, that's the most important thing that we need to keep in mind as we focus and move forward to this journey called life. And I'm going to leave with another quote from Prophet Muhammad, who had a quote. He says, work for this life like you're going to live forever, and work for the next life like you're going to die tomorrow. So many people have passed from this COVID experience. One of my team business partners in Richmond, Virginia, just recently passed from COVID, and we're working to get some flowers and stuff to her homegoing service. That's Miss Cassandra Crawley. And, you know, we're sorry for her loss. And, you know, she always was very, very active in our Surge 365 business. And, you know, I know she's going to be truly missed. And her running partner, Miss Vicki Bradley, also has COVID, so we want to keep her in our prayers also, you know, and hope that she, you know, fully recovers, because this COVID disease is just taking people. I mean, it's just really wiping out people. I mean, I've lost 5 people to COVID that I know of. And so, you know, we want to make sure if you're out there, do the best you can to stay healthy, and keep moving and striving forward, because it's no joke. We're living in a very serious time with some very serious things going on, and, you know, we need to pay close attention to what's going on. So with that, David, I'm going to turn it back over to you, sir.
All right. Thank you, sir. And my condolences to your associates and their families as well. And I know that's not an easy task, but so many are going through so much due to this pandemic. And it kind of reminds this time, the way things are now, remind me of the 60s when so many things was going on at one time. And it was so much confusion going around, because everything, like, everybody was upset with everybody for one reason or another. And this day and time, I know back in them days, they had the, of course, the racial thing. They had the Vietnam War was going on. They had college campuses in the uproar. They had women rights movement was going on. The hippie movement was out there at the same time. And a few other things was going on. You know, so, and today, coming full circle, here we have these pandemics. Then we have these fires that's taking over the West Coast. And then we have the flooding, tornadoes, and famine, and everything else. You know, people are coming from other countries trying to escape the fate that's that was in their home from Afghanistan, now the people from coming from Mexico, and now we have the Haitians. Now I want to talk a little bit about the Haitians, how they was treated, and where are they? You know, I don't, you know, all I don't have been keeping up with the news lately because I've been extremely busy. But we're going to talk a little bit about that. But again, through it all, that so many are going through so many atrocities in their life, people due to flooding and everything, lost pretty much everything they had due to fires as well. And like I say, so many is going through so much. But I believe that there's a God, you know, and I don't know why certain things happen to certain people. But I do know when it comes to loss to loved ones and tragedy that happens to us all, just keep on living if it hasn't happened to you. And it's the cycle of life, and whether you want to accept it or not. But since we are here, and I do believe we're here for a reason or a purpose, and I also know, especially you people who have been through the military, some may have to die so that others could live. And some people actually sacrifice their lives for people they don't even know, like the people in the military as well. And so and we fighting from a national standpoint, and right here in the hood, I don't know about anybody else's neighborhood, but my community, it's almost like a war zone. I mean, people, just, we having tragedies like on a daily basis now. I ain't talking about the whole Baltimore City. I'm talking about in my little area of town. Young people seem like every other day a young person's getting murdered. And I can't even imagine what the families are going through. Young people wiped out in the early stages of their life. And it bothers me greatly, but some things you can change and something you can't. But, you know, we can make an impact. And that's what we do with the National Black Energy. We try to make an impact. And through all of these tragedies and things that goes on, just yesterday, I should have put that picture online. I got a picture of myself and my new grandbaby. And she's staring up at me, and I'm staring down at her. They caught me like that. And every time I look at this picture, you know, it melts my heart. First of all, because my new little granddaughter. But the second thing is the cycle of life. I look at that picture and say, here she is 2 weeks old. Here, I'm 70 years old. And I was thinking, I said, by the time she graduates from high school, I'll be close to 100 years old. Or, I mean, not that old, but I'm talking about 90-something. And, but like I said, I think, am I leaving this world a better place for her, or I'm making it worse on her? And the way the climate changes and the water and the food and, I don't know. It seems like to me personally, it's getting kind of rough out here. You know, there's nothing really safe. But in any case, the cycle of life must go on, and we can choose to look at it in a never negative aspect, or we can look at it in a thing. It is what it is. Life is what it is. And I do believe that we can make some changes. But in order to make changes sometimes, we have to understand what's going on. You know, I'm a part of this thing called media, and the media can kind of sway you to go this way or think that way. They can take a subject matter and turn it upside down where it would have a multitude of people believing it, and it could be totally opposite. And I was noticing something the other day when all of a sudden it just seemed like they came up from nowhere. All of these Haitians was at the border. And the country of Haiti, all kinds of things are going on. All kinds of things has happened to them, not just recently, but for many years. And And sometimes we look at things so differently. I mean, sometimes in this country, the least of us is doing extremely well compared to what other people are going through. And so I got a brother on here that I want him to explain a little bit before. We're going to have a little open discussion later on. But there's a brother on here named Brother Cliff. Can you unmute yourself, sir?
Good evening, sir. Happy
yes, sir.
To be here.
I'm glad you're here, too, sir. And I was talking to Cliff earlier today, and I was speaking about Haiti. You know, all of a sudden, with thousands of people, and now there's no one there. They cleaned the places up. But I do know last week they was rounding people up like they was cattle. And that bothered me greatly as well. Then I even seen the President of the United States come on and kind of chastise those who was treating those people like that. And but now all of a sudden they're gone. I don't know where they went. I know they sent some back home, but I don't know the remainder, you know, what happened today. Nobody ain't saying too much about. But sometimes you got to dig a little deeper of why people treat other people differently. Here they are bringing people on a plane from Afghanistan and taking good care of planting, getting them, put them in homes, going to do everything, you know, make sure they have a living and everything else. Then you have other people who have a difficult time trying to get in this country. And then you have those who are flat out just not accepted, period. And Brother Cliff.
Yes, sir.
I asked you earlier, and you brought some interesting things up to me, and I asked you about the country of Haiti in their relationship with the United States. So what's your thoughts on that, sir?
Well, the country of Haiti has had a very difficult relationship with the United States. The United States' behavior toward the Haitian people has been largely a disgrace for at least the last 217 years, ever since the 1804 Haitian Revolution, where first a Hungan or a spiritual elder named Bachman had sparked a revolt by the Haitian people against their French captors, and then after he was assassinated, Toussaint Louverture took over and moved the revolution further and brought them to the brink of victory. And then when he was killed, Jean-Jacques Dessalines took over and finished the job. And the situation there was that the French and the Spanish were fighting over the entire island of Hispaniola, which is now known as Haiti on one side, the Dominican Republic on the other side. And after the Haitian Revolution had successfully, first of all, allowed the French and Spanish to weaken each other in their own rivalry, and then turned on the French when it looked like the French were kicking the Spanish out of, at least out of Haiti, the Haitian Revolution succeeded in essentially driving the French out of Haiti. But now there are a number of things that happened afterward which were equally disgraceful. Not only had the French been enslaving the Haitian people prior to the Haitian Revolution, but on the way out, the French deforested a large area of Haiti, which is why, according to what I have heard, I haven't flown over Haiti myself, but from what a number of people have stated, if you fly over the island of Hispaniola and take a picture, you can actually tell where the border exists between Haiti and the Dominican Republic. Because on the Haitian side of the border, it has largely been deforested. And the French basically stripped trees, they stripped gold, they stripped everything they could on their way out. And then after they left, the French contacted the Americans and the Canadians. And together with with the United States and Canada, they successfully blockaded Haiti and said that they weren't going to allow any traffic in or out from the island unless the Haitian people paid the French reparations. All these people in the United States and Europe screaming about how descendants of African slaves want reparations for being enslaved. And here were the French demanding reparations for the loss of their slaves. and the loss of the ill-gotten territory that they had taken first from the Taino and Arawak people, and then finally from the Africans that they had dragged over there in chains and servitude. So ever since that time, Haiti has been resource-stripped. They have basically struggled from one disaster to another. A lot of the disasters that they were subjected to were political. There was a U.S. occupation, more or less, in Haiti. I think in the early 20th century, there was a U.S. occupation there. And then when the U.S. occupation started to ease, what they did is they left dictators behind. They left François Duvalier and Jean-Claude Duvalier. And they keep getting confused as to which one was Papa Doc and which one was Baby Doc. But essentially, the father and the son. The father ruled over Haiti with an iron fist, took as many of the remaining resources out for himself as he could. He and his family lavished themselves with luxurious homes and clothes and shoes and cars, while the Haitian people in general suffered in poverty, and so did his son. And when the Haitian people finally got them up out of there, and they brought in Jean-Bertrand Aristide as their elected leader, the United States did everything they could to destabilize him. They went on the major media and said that Aristide was under psychiatric care. Well, who wouldn't be under psychiatric care after all the Haitian people had been through? And even the most recent president of Haiti, Jovenel Moïse, he was also suspected of having been, in large measure, a flunky for the West, as was his predecessor, Michel Martelly. This is a guy who had once been a pop singer parading around on stage in a diaper, and all of a sudden he becomes Haiti's president. And then he was followed by Jovenel Moïse, and then Moïse is assassinated. So all of these things that are going on in Haiti, all the political destabilization, most if not all of the economic suffering that the Haitian people have gone through, their susceptibility to hurricanes, mudslides, earthquakes, all of these things that have decimated the Haitian people and not so much the people of the Dominican Republic are because of first French, then U.S. intervention. And then in the meantime, U.S. media, Pat Robertson and his folk, they get on right-wing religious media and try to make the claim that the Haitian people are going through all of this because they sold their souls to the devil 200 years ago and pledged themselves to the animal spirits in exchange for their freedom. Now, they don't ever say in exchange for their freedom from what, but they will say that the Haitian people sold their souls to the devil in exchange for their freedom, and so as a result, now God is punishing them. So that's just a little bit of the history. Now, as far as the refugees that showed up in Texas, a lot of them didn't come directly from Haiti. Some of them did, but most of them actually came from Central and South America. They had left Haiti years ago in the middle of several of the hurricanes and the earthquakes, because they had an earthquake something like 10 years ago that leveled the presidential palace. And the people of Haiti fled there at that time, and also at the time that the United States came in there and took Jean-Bertrand Aristide out, because they took him out and shipped him off to the Central African Republic. And then Condoleezza Rice threatened to punish Haiti if they let him back in the Western Hemisphere. But the Haitian people, with all that stuff going on, they were trying to get out of Haiti because they realized how unstable the situation was. Largely because of U.S. interference, they ran to Central and South America, but now they found the situation in Central and South America largely intolerable too, because the U.S. wasn't just interfering there. They were also wreaking havoc in Central America, especially in Honduras, and in South America, in places like Venezuela and so on. And so as a result, the Haitians who were in Central and South America began that long trek to come to the border so that they could have an opportunity to come into the United States, supposedly because of the promise that they were told that President Biden had made that they would now be able to come into the country. That wasn't quite true either. But But basically, the whole situation with the people of Haiti is a 200-plus-year-long legacy of European and U.S. exploitation, enslavement, and control.
Oh, I tell you, Brother Cliff, I appreciate that, man. And that's some long suffrage, you know, that they've been through and still going through.
And I don't think I covered half of it.
Yeah, well, you covered enough, I'll tell you that, you know, and it seemed like it is a lot, but then again, it seemed like the same thing we've been going through here in the United States, you know, through the slavery systems and the Jim Crow areas and even till this day.
Well, the guys on horseback chasing the Haitians around at the refugee camp is very reminiscent of what the overseers did to our ancestors on the plantations on horseback and striking them with whips. Now, of course, they're saying now that these guys weren't using whips. Those are the reins of the horses. But they were swinging those reins around like they meant to do something with them.
And that's another atrocity. You know, it is 20th century and people are already going through so much. And then to be treated like that on top of all of that, you know, I find that very difficult.
Yeah.
But, I you know, this thing they call the race card. You know, why y'all keep bringing that up? You know, why that? Because of stuff like this, you know, and the way...
We play it because they put it in the deck.
Yeah, and I don't know. But in any case, for those who are with us, we have quite a few people with us this evening. And do anyone have a question for my brother, Brother Cliff, or a concern that you would like to share concerning our brothers from Haiti that's going through so much?
I do, Brother David. Thank you very much. Brother Cliff, I really, it's always a pleasure hearing from you, my brother. You are our historian. There's no question about it. And I honor you for the vast amount of information and knowledge you have to share with us. You're always dear to my heart. What I want you to, if you would be so kind, to express to us what we were privy to see as far as the horrific treatment that was going on when you spoke of the horseback riders and the atrocities that were being inflicted upon the refugees. I've seen pictures here and there, but if you could expound upon that, I'd appreciate it, because it was of such a degree to where I almost turned my attention elsewhere because it was painful.
Mm. Well, basically, from what I understand, those were Border Patrol agents, I think, supposedly. The director of Homeland Security, he's been on several talk shows this past week saying that was improper what they did. And Biden has supposedly come out and said that was wrong, that they shouldn't have been doing that. But then at the same time, they were saying, well, you know, they have to control the borders. They have to do something. And some people were saying that they were on the horses for their own safety. I'm not sure exactly what that was supposed to mean. But they make the same, I guess you might say, kinds of excuses that you hear, quite frankly, when you hear a story about a police shooting, that he feared for his life, that he was concerned about his own safety. So these guys who were certainly armed, and they certainly had lethal and non-lethal arms on them, they were afraid of a whole bunch of suffering and starving Haitian men, but mostly women and children, who were just trying to find a safe place to go. So
were these people actually from Haiti themselves, or were they shipped there to bring calm, or what exactly? Who were they?
Are you talking about the
horseback?
The men on horseback, from what I understand, were U.S. Border Patrol agents. So they were absolutely not on the same team as the people who had gathered there at the border. They were, I guess you might say, I don't know that they were all the way into Trump's Build the Wall faction, but they were there essentially to keep those Haitian refugees out and to turn them back and to prepare them to be deported back to Haiti. And I think maybe I don't know if it was a few hundred or a couple of thousand, but because I'm a little fuzzy on the numbers, but a percentage of them actually did get sent back to Haiti, which is kind of crazy because for most of them, if not all of them, Haiti is a place that they had not actually been in several years. Like I said, those people had primarily come from Central and South America. They had come up by land, which is why they didn't come in on boats. They came up through Mexico from Central and South America from conditions that were similarly horrific to what you see a lot of the people, a lot of the so-called Mexican refugees that Trump was trying to keep out. They had come from places like Honduras and especially places like Honduras, which had suffered a military coup, I think about 10 years ago. And the United States, of course, didn't do anything about that.
Yeah, they actually said thousands were deported back.
They might have been.
Then you mean to tell me they came from Central America and the United States put them on the plane and send them to a place already decimated,
yeah,
and these people don't have a clue what they're going, how they're going to survive there.
Pretty much.
You know, and the humanity.
They identified them as Haitian nationals. And so regardless of where they had come from, because, see, they had fled Haiti sometime before, like a year or years before, because there's been so much instability, especially over the last 10 or so years. There's been a lot of instability, really, ever since the Bush administration had flown into Haiti and grabbed Jean-Bertrand Aristide and his wife up at the presidential palace and said, well, yes, these Haitian rebels are coming for you. They're going to come and they're going to kill you and they're going to do all these things to you. And, oh, yeah, by the way, we're not going to stop them. Instead, what we're going to do is we're going to remove you. We're going to take you out of here, put you on a helicopter, and fly you out of Haiti, which they did. They flew Aristide, his wife, his family, and his closest advisors out of Haiti, put them on a plane, and sent them at first to the Central African Republic, a country that had seen five coups in the previous 9 years, one of the most unstable countries on the entire African continent, but one that very few people here ever hear about. They had Aristide essentially under house arrest in the presidential palace there until they could finally find a way to get down to South Africa, where there were some people who were friendlier to him. But then when Aristide started making noises about, I think I'd like to come back home, that's when then National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice came out and said that if he comes back to the Western Hemisphere, Haiti will be punished. Now, if you were getting him out of Haiti for his own safety, why are you going to punish his home country for letting him come back? But that was basically the statement that was made at the time, which told me that the United States actually wanted to see what happened. They wanted to see Jean-Bertrand Aristide, really the only truly democratically elected president that Haiti's had in a long time, removed and taken out of there. Now, Aristide had a successor, René Préval, who came into power, and he was not as popular as Aristide, but at least the people seem to marginally accept him as Haiti's president. But sometime after that, along comes Michel Martelly, and Martelly was known by many people to be essentially a stooge of the United States. but he wins election to be Haiti's president. And I think some people question the validity of that election. And then after Martelly, you got Juvenal Moise. And of course, we know what happened to Moise in the last year. I mean, he was assassinated. And his wife was seriously wounded. Now, I don't even know who's running Haiti now. Probably the elites like they always have been, because there's always been an elite class in Haiti who's had control of the economy, if not the political livelihoods of the people in Haiti. The Haitian police, who were long known to have been corrupt, the Haitian military, which was disbanded because it had participated in the original, in the coups that not only brought but the Duvaliers to power, but attempted to unseat Aristide. Though the military had been disbanded, the police was highly suspect, and yet you still had a lot of remnants of the old, they called them the Frap and the Tonton Macoute. And those were two basically terrorist groups within Haiti who were essentially in the pocket of the former regime of Papa Doc and Baby Doc Duvalier. And like I said, I'm not even sure who's running Haiti now, but it's in such a mess now between the political instability and the hurricanes that hit that country harder than most, and the earthquakes and all that sort of thing.
It's Ariel Henry, and he came into power in July of this year. But there's really not very much information about him, and if he's smart, there won't be very much information about him.
Yeah. Now, and I don't even know what the status is of any resistance on the ground. There probably is not much of one in Haiti. I know there's a sister named Marguerite Laurent. She goes under the pen name of Izili Danto, and she has written a blog, and I occasionally get emails from her. It's the Haitian, HLLN is the acronym, Haitian Legal Lawyers Network or something along those lines. And Haitian Lawyers Liberation Network or something. And so she's regularly speaking out for the Haitian people.
Well, Henri is the prime minister. They don't have a president at this particular time.
Hmm.
But the power in Haiti is shared between the president and the prime minister almost equally.
Yeah.
But the president was assassinated. They have not had an election. There is no current president, yeah. And Ariel Henry is, of course, backed by the U.S. They need to have their eyes and ears on the ground, so they put Henry in the position of the prime minister, and he is doing the U.S. dirty work. They needed someone that would cooperate, and Ariel Henry is going to cooperate because it's about the money. So they're paying him enough money to get the job done that they want done.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but again, Davis, just like you said, you know, it's really not too far-fetched from the black experience in America.
You know, and that what bothers me greatly because, you know, media, propaganda has always played its part in a lot of things. And sometimes because we don't hear things, if we don't research things, you know, it's a lot of atrocities going all over the place, not only in the hood, like I mentioned to you earlier. You don't hear too much about that. And that brings to mind, you know, in the news also, I'm going to keep bringing the negative news up, but we have to be aware of things, because you don't think things can happen to us again. We just witness in this country people try to overtake the government. And we had a man in the White House who was more, to my perspective, was more than willing to do so, too.
Sorry, you can't call him a man. You can call him a fool.
Yeah.
You can call him 45. You can call him that dude with the crazy hair. You can call him a whole bunch of things, but I reserve man for somebody that actually is a man,
you got
who actually does shoulder the real responsibility who actually does step up and do the right thing when the right thing is not popular to do, and does not kowtow to his own ego as opposed to the needs and the resources that are required to run the country and meet the needs of the people that you're supposed to be representing, as opposed to playing golf all the time in a resort that won't even let you live there because they don't want to be bothered with you now that you're not president either.
Thank you, Fran. Thank you.
Hello.
He's a male. He's a wasted Y chromosome.
Okay, we can go there. I can do that. Thank you, Brother Teasdale.
I'm glad y'all corrected me. Yeah, but like I say, it's no joking matter, though. Things are happening all around us and to us. And if we're not alert, it will hit home. Remember I was telling you, I was looking at my grandbaby, and those kind of thoughts were going through my mind as well. What kind of world is she going to walk into? You know, what kind of world, if we sit back and do nothing, it's going to take, you know, and the same thing that happened, you know, in Haiti, all around, throughout the diaspora, you have seen recently how we were treated in the Asian countries. You have seen, I mean, everything's happening here and half the Asians happening all over the world. And even those things seem cool to us, but you see an uprising of hate. And all types of groups preparing for warfare against us. And they are serious. You think they are not joking. They're very serious about what they're doing. And you just seen, like you say, they're riding on horses and whipping on us. You know, like it was back there in slavery. You know, ain't nothing changed as far as their mindset, as far as I'm concerned. But how do we, I just want to ask y'all a few, so this is a suggestion, let's just be solution-oriented. What can we do, if anything? Brother Cliff, I'm going to start with you first.
Okay. I think Brother Vernon has his hand up, too. I would think that we don't really exercise a lot of official power. You know, we got some people who are in places like the U.S. Congress, and we've got somebody in the White House in a number two position, but, of course, they are politicians. And so as politicians, they're going to be somewhat limited, not necessarily in terms of what they can do, but they're going to be somewhat limited in what they dare to do. So I think a lot of the initial pressure, just like with everything else from apartheid in South Africa to any number of other issues that we've had to push against oppression on, it's going to come down to what the grassroots, what civil society does. Which means that our grassroots and civil society organizations need to get to work, need to start to organize, need to start to begin to come together in a unified kind of a way. And our media, frankly, needs to follow your lead and needs to really start to commit itself to reporting the real information about what's going on, debunk some of the rumors, get rid of some of the disinformation that we are currently allowing our heads to be filled with. And quite frankly, not only is it disinformation, but it also distracts us from a lot of other things that are going on. We're so busy talking about the jab this and the jab that, that many of us probably didn't pay much attention to the situation of the Haitian migrants. And many of us are not paying any attention to climate change. They're not paying attention to a lot of the reports that are starting to come in now of evidence that the thermohaline belt in the oceans may be showing signs of starting to break down. If that happens, then you're going to have a whole lot worse going on than you got going on right now. So a lot of us, I think, need to be better informed about these things, and I think that's where media comes into play.
Well, I think it's even more than just media, though. You can't wait for somebody else to tell you the story.
Oh, you're right.
You know, but
I'm just saying that because we have media right here.
Right, and I understand that, Cliff. And if we could trust all the other media outlets to at least be about the reality of telling the truth. I mean, it's real simple. We don't have to have them big strategy, big communication strategy. Just tell the truth. Just refuse to put something on the air that has any modicum of untruth in it. Because if there's a little bit of untruth, if you keep digging long enough, it's going to get bigger. And the destruction of disinformation, that's kind. I think that it's malicious misinformation.
Mm.
They, those other people that don't look like us, take information and twist it around to suit their pocket and their process and their programs, because they have a process by which they keep us oppressed, and they have a program by which they use to keep us from being included. And they take information and they twist it around to accommodate that so that it does not look like they are being oppressive to people of color, you know? It's the process. But who developed the process, you know? It's the programs. We need to tweak the programs. But who created the programs in the first place? And how do they get to be the way that they are that we get left out of any kind of inclusion? There is no inclusion for at the highest levels. There isn't. You know, the C-suites, they have token black people, you know. Just like when 45 was on TV the other day and they had this big brother standing behind him and he had a sign that said blacks for 45. And I thought to myself, how much money did he make to do that?
Mm.
Because we, good, bad, or indifferent, right and wrong, if we're going to tell the truth, there are some of us who, if the number is big enough, they'll hold a sign up that will say anything. They don't care what the sign says. All they care about is what they're leaving out the room within their pocket. And that's unfortunate, but that's truth too, you know.
That's truth too. Fran, you were so right, because like I was telling you, I think it was last week or week before last, about 10 of our black newspaper, a couple of them, but historical black publication, has joined forces to form this coalition to put out information. But unfortunately, if you read the article behind that, is that the Walton family, the Zuckerbergs, and this other group called Allen something. What they do, they buy out media. And they also said this word curated. They're going to be putting out curated information. And I did my research on it, and it said, that means that they will put out strategic information. And I tell y'all all the time, we own less than 1% of the media. So now, even that 1%, they're going after now.
That's the malicious misinformation. Yeah. Malicious misinformation that I just talked about. That's exactly what curated information is. That's a nice way to say it. And many of us, people that look like us, curated, you know, they think of, when you think of curating or a curator, you think of a museum or you think of an organization like that, that is protecting or that is, you know, holding something so that it can be, offered at a later time, you know, we're going to curate this thing. But at the end of the day, it really is just another way to say they're swapping things around to accommodate themselves to get, you know, the end result that they're after. You know, if you ask a black man, does he want a job? The answer should be yes. But if you ask a black man, does he want a minimum wage paying job so he'll have to get three of them to feed his family? The answer is hell no. But what they do is they don't tell you that they offered him three minimum wage paying jobs for the black man and one high paying job to the white man. And the white man went to work and he was happy to go. And the black man refused the work. But they don't tell you the rest of it. That is the malicious misinformation. And it happens every day on all the networks. It does, because it's the people like the Waltons and the Zuckerbergs and those folks that have come together. Bill Gates, he's in there somewhere too. Don't let his foundation and the scholarships that he gives to Black kids distract you from the reality. He is not, you know, he creates an illusion that he is that guy that we can go to because he really does care about us. But that's an illusion. Do not be fooled. Don't get it twisted.
Right.
And Vernon, did you want to say something, sir?
Not really. I think it's all has been said. Coming up with a solution, we just have to keep wanting to develop our minds, wanting to help our community, and you know, share the information that we get with the person beside you, the person in front of you, and behind you, you know, until we all, I guess, can come to the same page, come on the same page.
Mm-hmm.
But they always want to say, you know, don't study our history, or, you know, not wanting to know about our history, but they keep putting what they have done to us in front of us in so many different ways,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you know, that's just something that's, you know, we can't accept. We have to, when we see it, we have to let others know that there's disinformation, misinformation, and those images are not correct. And we're going to, you know, stay on the front line and share the right information.
Well, let me say this now. They're getting so, this, you know, I mean, so arrogant about how they do things now. You know, they straight up to you now. They tell you right to your face what they're going to do to you.
And
you know, and we take it and we look at it like, okay, you know, like you shuck it off or something. But you know, like you say, from the top up all the way to the bottom down, you got those ones with resources, planning and scheming, and you got the ones that are down and low, ready to put up a gun and shoot you by any signal. Just give them a signal, they ready to roll. And we taking things, you know, like I say, our children and our children's children, our communities, like you say, we can be pulled over at any time, dragged out and be just, you know, belittled, and all sorts of things are taking place. I mean, straight up, one time they used to try to hide it sometime, but not now. Everything is, you know, straight up, they're going to tell you who they're going to let in and who they're going to let go. That Y chromosome you called earlier, you know, straight up, who he going to let into this country, who he won't let into. You know, and stuff like that, you know, people just sit back and, you know, shove it off, you know. But in any case, I'm going to make a vow. And some people say, you never say never. But, you know, and I think every man, everybody on here, you know, going to have to face the fact that, you know, yes, you can bend a little sometimes and this, that, but sometimes you're going to have to take a stand. I mean, that's something that you have to look yourself into the mirror. How far will you allow people to take you, your neighborhoods, your family? Are you going to sit back and do nothing? You know, that's a choice you have to make. But every choice got consequences to them. And if you don't do something, even if you sit back on the sideline, you did something. You did nothing. And so all I can say for the National Black Unity News, as long as I'm here, is that we ain't going to never be brought or kept by anybody.
Oh.
We ain't going to have no outside persuasion telling us we can't do this and we can't do that. And but one thing, we're going to always put out information that's going to be solution-oriented. And we're going to help where we can. But unfortunately, there's a lot of people, and I think Fran said it best, you know, some people got a price. And if you hit that price, they will, I mean, you know, and that's nothing new either. You know, we know that's been going on for a long time. You know, we always had people who would sell you out. Or would sell out just for maybe survival or just personal greed. But in any case, anyone else, before we have several minutes left, I know it's quite a few people on there, even on this subject matter or something else, you want to share before we shut down?
Just myself. Go ahead, Dempsey. Pardon me.
Thank you. I appreciate that, brother. That's what I like about you, man. You are so gracious. And just like so many of you are already on this call, y'all are some wonderful people. Again, this is my name is Walt Eugene Dempsey Murphy, and I am the managing director of the National Black Unity News. And when David first started this conversation this afternoon, he was talking about the newspaper in reference to what we are and how we pretty much operate when it comes down to our responsibility to our community. And he's absolutely correct. Our goal is to do one thing and one thing only, and that is to provide to our Black, melanated, African-American community solution-oriented information. And it's unfortunate that there are so many of us, like David has said before, that our part of media has been absorbed by and controlled by forces that are not going to be of this event. Before we get any farther, before I go about the National Black Unity News any farther, I want to throw this thing in here really quick. That I was listening to a television show yesterday, and it was Last Week Tonight. And this guy, Don Oliver, was talking about this the border and how it's being managed and a few other things and how Biden is doing this and that and the other. But one of the things that, you know, with the whips and beating up on the Black folks and all that, he showed all of that. But he also had one individual come on who said he was deported back to Haiti. And he said when he got there, they had taken the chains off of his wrists and off of his waist so that the cameras could not see it.
Mm.
And so I just wanted to put that out there because that it was, you know, you can go back and watch the show for yourself and glean the same information that I got from it. But that's what the individual said, not John Oliver, but the person said that he was on the plane and they had all of them in chains. And so, but getting back to the National Black Unity News, we'll expand on that later. But getting back to the National Black Unity News, ladies and gentlemen, all of you can hear the sound of my voice. Hear this and hear this clearly. The National Black Unity News is here for you. Our goal is to provide for you an outlet, a means for you to get your words, your concepts, your ideas, your products to us so that we can benefit from it, so that we as a community, not a neighborhood, a community, do just better. I was listening to Dick Gregory not too long ago, and he was talking about how, about, you know, a neighborhood. And he was saying, yeah, you know, you can go to one neighborhood here and go to another neighborhood there, and you see the people who live in that neighborhood operating it because it's their neighborhood. He said he went to a Black neighborhood, and there were other people operating the businesses there because that's what he saw. And that was back in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s. And this interview, I think, was maybe about maybe 10 years ago, with the way he looked. And so I'm willing to say that it was even in the 2000s. And so what we need to be building is what we have right here in the National Black Unity News, a community. A neighborhood is a small portion, and it is true, you know, but a community is self-sufficient. It has the ability to have its own police, its own lawyers, its own, it has its own. And ladies and gentlemen, we as Black people here in the United States of America, right here, right now, have everything. I don't mean partially, everything that we need to build a great community. And back to you, Dave.
Hey, anyone else before we close out?
I just wanted to.
Dave.
I'll wait now. Go ahead.
Yes, this is Dr. Pender. I'd like to for everyone to look at the history of the Haitian people and its relationship with the United States. And it goes back into slavery, how that they emancipated themselves from the colonization, and that the United States did not want our slaves to see this because it was the start of a great revolt. And from that time on, the United States has dejected any part of the Haitian government. And so therefore, that's why they're sent back, because that's one of those things that happened in the past, and they still have this grudge against them. I just want to throw this in.
Yeah, the history is going to repeat itself. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Not only that, but the Haitian Revolution itself as a result of the Haitian Revolution, many of the slave owners in Haiti, the French slave owners in Haiti, they left Haiti and went to the United States, most particularly the Gulf, specifically the New Orleans area, which is why you have the French Quarter there now, which is why the emblem on the helmet of the New Orleans Saints is a fleur-de-lis. You've got, and it's also why the Hollyweird version of New Orleans has all these voodoo, Hollyweird voodoo. They don't really understand what voodoo is, but that's that influence. And shortly after the 1804 Haitian Revolution, there was the 1811 slave revolt, which happened in Louisiana. It started on the Andrew Plantation, 35 miles north of New Orleans. A brother named Charles Deslon led a revolt there. They overcame their oppressors. They swept through 7 plantations using just farm implements, and their advancing army got within 9 miles of New Orleans before the U.S. Army intercepted them and routed them. The ones that escaped, some escaped into the swamps and joined the Maroons. Some were killed on the spot, and their heads were cut off and stuck on pikes along the Mississippi River to frighten anyone else who might want to think about revolt. And I like to say sometimes, only half-jokingly, that if a couple of things had gone differently and those advancing rebels had made it to New Orleans, where there was a cache of weapons, where one of the operatives was supposed to knock off that cache of weapons and ferry them up the river to them. If they had succeeded, they might have been able to defeat slavery in one blow, and we might all be speaking Yoruba today.
Yeah.
But that did not happen. Now, with regard to where we go now, I'm reminded of the words of Amilcar Cabral. You talk about untruth. Here's what Cabral said. Don't tell lies. Fight lies when they are told. Don't disguise difficulties, errors, and failures. Do not trust in easy victories nor in appearances. Mask no difficulties, mistakes, failures. Claim no easy victories. Practice and defend the truth, always the truth, to militants, leaders, and the people. Whatever the difficulties, the knowledge of the truth can create. Educate ourselves. Educate other people, the population in general, to fight fear and ignorance. That's the long version and pieces of Amilcar Cabral's somewhat famous Tell No Lies, Claim No Easy Victories speech. And the rest of the media may not have the courage to do that, which is why it's going to be up to black media to, I think, show the way and push back against it. Vehicles like National Black Unity News, the Black Agenda Report, you know, all praise to ancestor Glenn Ford, in Black Internet Radio, and on and on and on.
Well, I have one request, David, and I hope everyone here will hear me and receive this from the place it's coming from. We have got to embrace our young people. We all, every last one of us, needs to find a first or second grade child and teach them to read. Because if we don't get them reading by the second grade, by the third grade, they're going in the pipeline. And you know the pipeline is not a good line to be in because it ends up in the penitentiary. Third grade, if our kids are not reading on a third grade level, when they leave the third grade, they are destined to go to jail. They are not going to college. They're not going to trade school. Some of them may not live past 18. We have got to teach our kids how to read, and we got to get them. See, the white man understands that if they can get them early enough, they can direct their path. Well, we got to get them. They're our kids. They're our children. They are our children. Why is the white man getting his hands on them at all? I'm starting in church because that's where I can get my hands on the most children that need help learning how to read. That we started a tutoring program. It started today, and it's just amazing at how many little kids are over there, and they want you to read to them. and I was reading to them, and then I was teaching them some words and sounding out stuff, and it was so easy. At first, I was a little intimidated, like, how am I going to teach these children how to read? Well, you read to them, and then you ask them to repeat the words, and then you sound out the letters, and before you know it, they're reading to you. We have got to do it. We've got to do it. We've got to set the pipeline down.
And I'm going to say this, too, on top of that. You know, I can talk. We can talk about what goes on around the world, but sometimes we need to stop and look what's just around us, just where we are.
Mm-hmm.
And I look. You know, I can make all types of complaints and stuff like that, but I look right here on this mm-hmm. on this Zoom call. I ain't talking about the people on Facebook Live and all the other, you know, everything else. But I see from where I stand. Right here, right now, an army,
mm-hmm.
an army of information. I see a wealth of experience. I see real concerned people who really want to make change. And just like me and Brother Cliff were talking about, even cells, the little cell, you know, and it hooks up with another one and another one and another one, and it starts multiplying and things, and that's just the way we can do. And yes, the media, the National Black Unity News, can do that through our podcasting as a group. We can do that through the directory. We can do that. See, one thing, and I'm going to say this and I'm going to shut up. We can talk about a lot of things, but it's time to start doing. And we have no excuses, none whatsoever. As like Fran said, we don't reach back and reach our own children. It's our fault. We can't blame nobody else but us. If we don't support our own businesses and services to help them, you know, even to prosper, that's our fault. And if we don't support our Black institutions, our colleges, and create our own scholarships so they don't snatch our best and brightest, as they say, and send them to their camps and to their schools. And we don't, it's going to be our fault as well. But all things are possible. And it's also said when two or three are gathered, all things are possible as well. But in any case, you know, before we shut it down, you know, I love every one of y'all, man. I appreciate you coming on. We'll be on tomorrow night. We got a young brother by the name of Milan Butler. Most of y'all know him. He will be our guest speaker tomorrow night and hosted by Kathleen Murphy and Walter Murphy. And I encourage you to be on because he has a lot to share with you. There are going to be quite a few new people on. As I was telling you, we're not sitting out. There's quite a few new people that's joining the National Black Unity News because they see the value. If you would have heard the conversation, because they did, of course, they all did their research. They went into the archives. They read your articles. And they said, I want to be a part of this. And I had mentioned to you this before. And that's kind of my fault because I haven't did a lot of outreach. But I always knew that we are not belittling ourselves or cheapening ourselves, but see, we're not in about, you know, trying to get money from people. You know, what our thing is putting out information, and we put it so that, and that's one of the reasons, be straight up about it, it's one of the reasons why most of our Black media are being kept by corporate America, because they couldn't afford to continue in their run. They tried to be like other newspapers that had that type of support in the Black community. You know, other folks ain't gonna support them, and they finally felt, you know, I know that hopefully they figured that out by now, but yet they outpriced their own community. And so therefore they had to be kept by a corporate or a lottery or something in the community. And that's 90% of Black newspapers. And that's how they survive. And they are in the same boat as the Mother 10 publication. They can't save us so much. Or they would offend their keepers, as I want to say what it is. But with us, we design our race to be unique so that everybody can participate. We even got a free service. But anybody knows who's a business person, know that nowhere in this country, maybe there is something that if you tell me about it, that you can get this much bang for your buck in a publication. We give you not a full page for a certain amount of money. You get to educate your own people. See, that's the unique what we do. You educating your own people about who you are and what you do. You bring them forth good information. And I'm going to say this in closing. It all saying, we all we have, we all we got. Nobody's coming back to save us. We hear these cliches all the time. But there's some benefits to that. Brother Cliff was just talking about truth. If you don't be truthful to yourself, truthful to your people, and people are so fearful now because everybody's trying to take advantage, especially from their own people sometimes. That's why we used to, even Cliff was talking about the history in Haiti, how some of their own turned on for greed. And so, you know, some of the things, you know, like I say, the truth is the truth. And if you're true to yourselves, be true to the cause of us helping our baby. Like I said, that picture that I want you to go on my page and you see me and my granddaughter just sitting there looking at each other. And that's exactly what I was thinking about. What kind of world I'm going to leave her. Because, by the time she gets 20, 25, I may not even be here. If I'm lucky, you know, I'll be 95 or something. By the time she'll be coming out of school. But what kind of school will she go to?
Yes.
Who's going to be teaching her?
Right.
Who's going to be influencing her in her community? And you think it's rough now? Look what she got to go through. The garden she's going to have to go if we don't make a better way.
Yeah.
And so it's up to us, especially when we become elders in the families. The elders supposed to impart and our wisdom, knowledge, understanding, most important, even love. And if we don't do that, we can't blame the generation after us. We can't blame the millenniums. I believe God give you us wisdom, give you this longevity for a reason, for you to share. So with that being said, before we shut it down, go on once, anybody.
Yeah, brother, I definitely had an interjection because I come in, I'm listening. I just want to say to all those who contributed to the topic and dealing with the issues going on with Haiti, the United States, that, you know, everybody has their area of expertise, their field of strength that God has blessed them in. And I can sit back and tell you with all due respect, it's a privilege to be able to be online. Because for some things, it's an education. Other things, it's the motivation. And yet, still with others, it's about the vocation, where I'm going with it. And I want to just let you all know that we've taken this time and we've brainstormed. We've, given our input. And it's something that, like you said, it's time for the action to be given, you know. We can impact the educational process. We can impact the movement of media and the direction that it's going. We can impact even the communities where our people need to be girded up, educated, and empowered with knowledge that will help them, especially in these last days and times. And I really thank, you know, everyone for their input, even all the way down to Dr. Pender and Cliff and Fran. God bless you. I mean, you guys have really enabled me to sit down and, you know, because with all due respect, everybody's given different information. They develop their own ideas about Haiti and the Haitian people. And until you actually know the relationship and how things are with the Haitian people and history,
in the history of slavery and going forward. I mean, there are a lot of people who need to have this information, and I hope that as we have taken the time to record, I hope we're recording all of this, that we can share this information with other people as the podcast moves forward. Because other people need to hear this, and we may want to send it out in the email, mass mailing. That's just me speaking in. And I wanted to let you know that tonight was a true educational and informative process for me. It made a big impact. So I bless you all, and I want to thank you.
Gee, brother, I appreciate you. Really do. And Brother Cliff, man, you know I had the highest respect for you, sir, because, you know, I love it, man, but people who just do what they do, you know, and ever since I've known Cliff, he's been a wealth of information for me, straight up, you know, and I appreciate that. I love the way God put people in certain positions for them to even have an interest in learning certain things, you know. And that's what makes a community. That's what makes a family, because everybody has these certain gifts and certain talents. And when we bring them together, we bring them all to the table, everybody feasts on it. And that's, again, ladies and gentlemen, leads way to the National Black Unity News. And with that being said, I'm going to say to you all, please be on tomorrow night, because you're going to meet some new family members. Things are growing. And for such a time as this, we need every man, woman, and child. This is not a drill, ladies and gentlemen. This is warfare. Lives is at stake. There's an enemy, whether you want to believe it or not, are planning your demise right now. Want ready to kill your baby. Like France said, they ready to put them in jail. Already got plans for them. And you got massive amount of people just don't see your worth, period. They just want to take you out. But through the grace of God, we have survived many, many atrocities. You know, it takes a lot to live and to experience and to go through things. And most of y'all already know y'all been through so much and still going through a lot of things. But yet you still find a way to give and you still find a way to share. And that's what it's all about. That's true strength. And if you believe in God, he know he don't make no mistakes, none. You are who you supposed to be. But you got to dig deep within yourself and bring it out. You have to nurture yourself. Bring those gifts up to par. And they say, in the old saying, it will make a way for you. And it will make a way for us. It will make a way for all of us, because when you can bring something to the table and I can bring something to the table, again, we all feast upon it. And so that's what we're doing with the National Black Unity News. People talk about unity. We actually doing it. And we demonstrate it. We share and we care. And we're going to keep it going. And I'm going to say a good night. Join us tomorrow night at 7:30. And we're going to talk about some serious newspaper business, but we're going to talk about us as well. Thank you, Brother Cliff, man. Much love and respect, sir, and all the rest of the guests. You know how we go and how we roll, and we all in this together. And like I said, each and every one of you are so unique in your own way. Like I say, man, the table that we have, man, I feast on it all the time. You know, there's so much wealth around it. You know, I'm a big old fool. I'm full. But I can always make room for more. So with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, good night. See you tomorrow night. And how they say, keep hope alive. Keep on fighting till the victory is won and all that good stuff. And take care.
Thank you, David. Good night, everyone.
Good night, everyone.
Goodbye.
I think this long, though, maybe they're right. Maybe they're doing what JP's talking about, piecing things together as to where that ball is in different frames, have the ability to do that. So it's going to be one of two things. When it takes this long, it probably should stand, or they're gathering the administration information.
Have to review the rolling on the field stand.
It's Philadelphia football. First down. Dallas is starting the first time out. And the first challenge. We've played less than 10 minutes in the quarter. We've had just about everything already in this game tonight. Yeah, that's a good job by Philadelphia defense line, though. Javon Hargrave in particular. Of resetting the line of scrimmage, you see Dak can't even get his feet going when you look at the replay. He can't get any momentum going. That's a good job by the defensive front. And also on the previous play, the effort to get Ezekiel Elliott down before he got in, it seems to be a huge one. That is big time. And then inside the one, so now both teams have started with the